Some of you are here today that were not with us yesterday. So we're going to do a little review of what we did yesterday evening. Here's our garland ritual. Go ahead. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Dhruva Maharaj, this section of Srimad Bhagavatam is very much loved and repeated and spoken again and again. In Vaishnav circles, it's not only found in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's found in other Puranas as well. The lessons are abundant, and we're going to try to touch on some of them. The context from yesterday evening, this is the very beginning, not only the beginning of Satya Yuga, but the beginning of a new creation, a new universe. And we reviewed from Canto 1, Canto 3, now Canto 4, the sequence of the unfolding of creation, the sub-creation of Brahma. In the beginning, this morning, we're going to hear further items of the sub-creation of Brahma. And then another one of the ten topics is the Manus and the lineages of kings from each of the Manus, with prominent ones, of course. We mentioned yesterday, and it becomes important again this morning, not everything in the Bhagavatam is chronological. It's very logical, but not sequenced by time, because this morning, for example, we're going to hear about the creation of destructive forces in the universe, which come about at the very beginning of the universe, not just fourth canto, or not just before Dhruva takes his birth. It's part of the creation. But it's being presented here because it plays into this beginning topic of Canto 4, Chapter 8. That is to say, there's destructive forces in the universe. The destructive forces in the universe follow the mode of goodness, excuse me, the mode of ignorance. And then persons influenced by the mode of ignorance do destructive things. And then people react to those destructive things, and it just implicates everybody in guna and karma. The flow of the material creation goes on. By involvement in the modes of nature and reacting to the modes of nature. And then there's an alternative to reacting, and that's what our topic is this morning, responding. We have a choice. It's one of the topics of Bhagavad Gita. Living entity has minute free will, being part and parcel of the Supreme, who has unlimited free will. Living entities have minute free will, and we can choose to react to destructive forces or people that do mean and harsh and bad things, and we can become reactive. That's an option. And then we're caught up in the flow of material illusion. Or we can choose to respond. Now, I don't know if any of you are aware, but this terminology, react and respond, it's out there in the secular world. For people that do counseling, it's a phrase that they use, so that's why I selected it. There is an option to respond rather than react to destructive influences that are acting upon you, because here we are. We're in a world of duality. We discussed this yesterday. We're repeating it again. It's a Bhagavad Gita message, isn't it? One of the first instructions Krishna gives, Matra Sparshas Tukanteya Satoshna Sukha Dukada. And his advice in that stage is tongue statiksha swabhar, just tolerate. Because you're being intolerant isn't going to change the fact that it's a place of duality. It's a place of duality. And sometimes it's cold. And sometimes it's hot. Sometimes it's night. Sometimes it's day. Sometimes there's happiness. Sometimes there's distress. Sometimes there's honor. Sometimes there's dishonor. It's the nature of the place. So we're going to hear some principles of responding rather than reacting. And one of the response lessons we're going to hear this morning is accept. It's a place of duality. And there's other acceptance elements. Now, acceptance, we'll go into it. What I'm doing right now is just touching on a preview of what this morning's class is going to be. I'm touching on the elements. Then we'll go into the subject matter and we'll massage the elements again. How to go beyond duality. This is the world of duality. Yoga teaches how to go beyond. If you're not connected to Krishna, you'll stay within the world of duality and struggle. Daivyeshu gunamaya mama maya duratiya. There is an alternative. Mamivaye prapadyante. So what does that look like? This section is a profile of what it looks like. And one of the very important parts, along with our making free will choices to respond rather than react, is to have somebody who is in that response space, like, you know, a devotee, a well-situated devotee. So the mother, I've gone over this subject so many times, emerging from this subject of Dhruva, is his mother's a hero. Sometimes in our lives, whether you're a mother or a friend or a father or a devotee in the community or just in the world, sometimes people come to you where life threw a rock and hit them and it hurts and they come to you. Sometimes. This will teach you principles how to respond and help them respond rather than react and just feel hurt. Really practical. Just a little sharing. One of the presentations that I've been making in colleges is the art of meditation, overcoming negative emotion. I can tell you it's a big hit because everyone is experiencing negative emotions. Millennials in particular, it's over the top. Medical statistics show, so without details. Everyone is experiencing. So it's a very relevant topic. And having gone over this topic again and again and again and again and again and again with different audiences, I've become quite familiar with principles that are out there in the secular world to help people overcome negative emotions. And they can be useful in a devotee world. We can be helpful not only in our own when life hits you with rocks and it hurts, but being a good community member, a good mother, a good father, a good friend. Well, we can help people, and it's right in this Dhruva Maharaj story. So there's a lot, and I think I'm ready to begin. I'll say one other thing. This presentation has been designed So it's a little more interactive rather than just information. The interactive is to help bring transformation, not just information, information, information. So be prepared. If you don't have a notepad, maybe during the break, get one. And if you don't have one, there's some paper back there, or everyone has their handheld device, and you can turn it on, because when it comes to writing things down, it's really helpful to write it down. It's helpful to write it down because it's an education principle. Your thoughts have to become clear when you write something down. If you don't write it down, your thoughts are kind of mushy, flaky, vapor, and writing it down makes it more, and you have to kind of edit a little bit because you're putting it down on paper. It helps make your thoughts more clear. Those that don't have paper, you can raise your hand and someone will bring you a piece of paper and a pen if you want that instead of your handheld device or your notepad. So there will be periodically little pause and you write stuff down sections. And there's going to be an exercise at the end of this morning's class that you'll be asked to do after the class. So be prepared. It's a little different. It's part of teacher training course part one is these interactive things. So here we go. There are five chapters. It starts with Canto 4, chapter 8 through 12. And yesterday we discussed 488. You can look that up later, please, on your handheld device and find six benefits from doing what we're doing right now. And the conclusion at the end, chapter 12, Maitreya says this should be heard every morning and every evening. So we're following Bhagavatam's recommendation. Here we go. The first verse. So we're now in the beginning stages of creation. It's not chronological, but Brahma is doing the sub-creation. Now, earlier in Canto 3, Swayambhuva Manu appeared. But before Swayambhuva Manu appeared, these personalities mentioned here appeared. So it's not chronological. It's purposeful by Vyasadeva compiling the way that he has. The four great Kumara sages headed by Sanaka, as well as Narada, Ribhu, Hansa, Aruni, and Yati, all sons of Brahma, did not live at home, but became Urdhva Reta, or Naishtika Brahmacharis, unadulterated celibates. Now, they're the firstborn, the four Kumaras pictured here. And they became super attracted to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. As you see, it's like very nice painting. And others, so the lineages of descendants from Brahma don't occur with these personalities mentioned here because they didn't marry, they had no offspring. Next, 2 through 4 speaks of destructive forces. Because when you create a universe, you're going to have to take the post of Brahma someday. You're going to have to do good things and bad things, or create the facility for good things. Because why? Because karma, when it's reactivated by the contact of time and the living entities with Pradhan, that karma that's been dormant becomes reactivated. And the modes of nature also become activated, because they were dormant when time is withdrawn. So there's continuation of previous karma and continuation of previous modes. And the destructive mode is part of the creation, not just good. There's good, passion, and ignorance. So text 5 says, I have summarily explained the causes of devastation. We're going to go over those, 2 through 4. One who hears this description 3 times, more is good too, attains piety and washes away the sinful contamination from his soul. And in the commentary of this verse 5, Prabhupada writes, devastation takes place because of irreligion and falsity. So now there's the big devastation, and there's the little ones, and there's the really tiny ones. There's cycles of time that move, and irreligion and falsity destroy. So the description in verse 2 is, from Brahma, irreligion, a son, is created, and a daughter, falsity, and then there's this incestuous relationship between brother and sister, not good, and that creates other problems. Dumba and Maya, here, cheating, is how Prabhupada has translated it. And then from those come other forces, greed and cunning, and then anger and envy, and quarrel, and harsh speech, and death, and fear. These are not nice things, but it's part of creation that unfortunately Brahma creates, because living entities have bad karma and low modes of nature. So the forces are there to reciprocate with their situation. Excessive pain and hell. So those are some bad things. And in the handout that you will receive, if you haven't already, you're going to see this chart, this slide, and then another one shortly that has to do with Suruchi. Don't do that now. Don't do that now, because everyone will get distracted. We don't want distracted. We want attention. So the question is raised because text 5 says by hearing these 3 times, one can be saved. Shri Radha Shama Sundara Ki. Day. How does knowing these, this list 2 through 4, help one become pious? Because that's what's said. One attains piety and washes away sinful contamination. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, by knowledge one can avoid these items. Now it's possible you can know and still not avoid these items. That's the mixed devotee. But the knowledge is supportive of bhakti. It's awakened by bhakti. So knowledge helps. So you see the note at the bottom. We're going to give you a little handout at the end of class. So after the class, when you have discussions over prasadam or whatever, this is a request. Please take this handout sheet and do the application exercise, which is look at the chart, consider these items that are in the previous chart, and how are these factors related to each other and related to the Dhruva topic. This is an application exercise, so it's not just like over your head and you forget about it. Please, it's a request. It will help us go forward with our whole experience together. So that's the first 5 verses of chapter 8. The next 3, 6, 7, and 8 is the lineage. So after describing the Urdhvareta, the Naishtika Brahmacharis, the first verse, the principles of destruction of the universe, and the benefits of hearing them comes the lineage of Dhruva. So we saw the lineage of Dhruva yesterday. We'll go over it again. Dhruva's in the lower left corner. He's the son of Suniti and Uttanapada. We're going to hear some more about both of them. And over to the right, the second queen, Suruchi. So Uttanapada is a son of, direct son of Swayambhuva Manu. He has a brother, Priyavrata. We don't hear about him so much until Canto 5, but this is Canto 4. And in Canto 3, we heard about at least one of the three sisters, Devahuti, and everything about Devahuti. A lot about Devahuti and her marriage to Kardamama, and Lord Kapila becomes their son. Mentioned it yesterday. I just find it interesting. Dhruva and Lord Kapila are cousins. First cousins. They were contemporaries. Did they spend some time together? We don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's somewhere in some Purana. But it gives you an idea. He's teaching Sankhya philosophy and so forth and so on. And he lived a long time, or stayed on in the material creation for a long time. In any case, then Brahma is at the top. So this four generations from the very, very beginning of creation, this is Satya Yuga, and the means of achieving perfection during Satya Yuga is meditation, dhyayate. So Dhruva is going to become a meditator. So here's an image to illustrate King Uttanapada. He had an older and a younger queen. The younger queen is Suruchi. And although younger, that was his favorite queen. And we saw in that chart, she had a son. And the son's name was Uttama. And the elder queen, but literally abandoned, was Suniti. Exalted as she was abandoned. We'll hear some more. And that was Dhruva's mother, Suruchi and Suniti. And when Dhruva was a little boy, growing up, he made no distinction between the two. The disregarded, abandoned queen and the stepmother. He made no distinction. Now we're going to see profiles of these three shown in these images, and also King Uttanapada. And it's teaching us react or respond. I mean, there's many other things, but that's the highlight that I want to focus on. So, in your life, has it ever happened that someone mistreated you? Of course. Has it ever happened that you somehow hurt someone else? Intentionally, unintentionally, regretfully, but, and what was your response when either of those two things happened? What makes one respond versus react, or react versus respond? So that's what we're going to look at. Remember, we're in this place of duality, and there's always this and that. So we're going to face mistreatment or harshness or destructive forces. It's part of the place. So how to not be in the reacting mood and go to the responding mood. So we'll take a look first at the profile of Suruchi. And So she has two of the destructive qualities mentioned in that list, verses 2 through 4. She's very proud and she's very envious. She's envious because she wants her son to become the king. But it's not going to happen because her son was the younger son and the elder son becomes the next king. So she was envious of Dhruva. He's a little boy and she's envious of him. And she's really proud. She's the favorite queen. So she acts from envy and pride, and what comes out is really cruel and harsh speech. It's a product of that destructive force. And it can lead to destructive behavior that can lead to further destructive behavior. It's just how the world goes on. If those who are caught up in the modes of nature, that's what happens. So Dhruva desired to sit on his father's lap. This is text 10. While the child, Dhruva Maharaj, was trying to get on the lap of his father, Suruchi, his stepmother, became very envious of the child and with great pride and spite, she began to speak so as to be heard by the king himself. And it wasn't just she spoke. Look at her body language. I have a nickname for her. So nasty. Very nasty. Prabhupada's comment is this situation, these two characteristics, pride and envy, they're two sides of the same coin. One leads to the other leads to the one. It's just another manifestation of the same thing. We could examine it, but she's envious of Dhruva. And along with that envy of Dhruva is pride in her position. So she speaks according to both. So here's these, you'll see this in your handout sheet that I'm also going to ask you to discuss when you sit together with somebody at Prashadam. Instead of like, hey, I haven't seen you for a while, how's it going? Discuss this subject. Please. So arising from these destructive forces, then the behavior of harsh speech comes and Dhruva becomes the object. She's the victim, in one sense, of these destructive forces. Now she could also choose and say, no, I choose something else. But she's not choosing something else, and therefore she's subject to these forces. Same for us, same for people that we interact with. Per the verses 2 through 4 of the beginning of that chapter. That's why they're at the beginning of the chapter. Those forces were there before Suruchi took birth. Now, Suruchi, this is the beginning stages of creation. She had a previous life, not necessarily in this cycle of creation, but in the previous cycle of creation. Souls don't come into being. So even in the body of Mahavishnu, her karma and guna were dormant, but they became active through creation. And now she's behaving like she did in her previous lives, prideful and envious. Incapable of very harsh speech. So here's what she said. We saw the body language, and now here's some more body language. She said, three verses, my dear child, you do not deserve to sit on the throne or on the lap of the king. Surely you are also the son of the king, but because you did not take your birth from my womb, you are not qualified to sit on your father's lap. Really? My dear child, you are unaware that you were born not of my womb, but of another woman. Therefore, you should know that your attempt is doomed to failure. You are trying to fulfill a desire which is impossible to fulfill, because I say so. Well, she's giving him some alternative. If you at all desire to rise to the throne of the king, then you have to undergo severe austerities. First of all, you must satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. So she knows about Narayana worship and devotional service, and she's not uneducated. She didn't attend a bhakti program, but she understands. But she's so full of herself, so prideful. Then, when you are favored by him because of such worship, you shall have to take your next birth from my womb by the Lord's favor. So, essentially, she's saying, you have to die, and then in your next birth, you can take birth from my womb, and then you'll be all right. How nasty. And what does this little boy understand about what she said anyways, other than her body language and her harsh tone? So there's a little profile on Suruchi, pride. Although Krishna is the giver of spiritual awakening and liberation, she's saying instead, Krishna, pray to Krishna, engage in austerities and worship of Krishna so you can take birth from my womb. Forget the transcendental knowledge and forget, this liberation. If you're really fortunate, you'll die and take birth from my womb. But first you got to do devotional service. Pride can make one think that they're bigger than Krishna. That is, by Krishna's mercy, I'm up here, Krishna's down there, Krishna's kind to you, you can take birth from my womb because that's the best thing. So Krishna becomes pulled down instead of one who can give the highest benefit, one can give one's own conception of what's beneficial. Pride is a destructive force. So next, we're going to profile Uttanapada, the father and king. And remember, his father is Swayambhuva Manu, whose grandfather is Lord Brahma. He's way up there in what he has received and the persons who he has direct relation with. But as a snake, when struck by a stick, breathes very heavily, Dhruva Maharaj, having been struck by the strong words of his stepmother, began to breathe very heavily because of great anger. And he looked to his father, and his father said nothing. He burst into tears, and he ran from the palace looking for his mother. So now let's take a look at Uttanapada for a moment. Why was he so indifferent to Dhruva, and he neglected his duty as a father and a king? Because fathers and kings, they extend protection to their subordinates. No protection. And seeming indifference. Little boy, looking to his father, help. Nothing. So the analysis, there's several parts. his weak-heartedness is described in Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere, described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Hridaya Dorbalyam. Hridaya Dorbalyam. Krishna uses this term describing Arjuna. That is, when you know what is to be done and you don't do, why? Weakness of heart. And why is that weakness of heart? Undue attachment to the temporary. In this case, it's his adorable younger wife. Too much attachment. If I say something, maybe she won't be happy. She'll be displeased with me, so I can't say anything. Now, he doesn't have to yell at her, but he has to say something and do something. Nothing. He knows what to do. He doesn't do it. Later, we'll hear, he is very repentant, very remorseful for his negligence due to this undue attachment to Suniti, Suruchi. And so he's avoiding his prescribed duty as a father to protect and shelter his son, and a king. All subjects are to be protected, what to speak of sons. So this is another non-response. It's a reaction. Although it's silent, it's not nasty like Suruchi. It's a reaction to a situation that calls for action. Now we're going to hear a third profile. That's Suniti's response. So listen carefully. I'll say it again. Those of you that are mothers or fathers, or those of you that have friends, or those of you that are devotees, that somebody in the community comes to you hurt by something, or somebody out there that in the workplace or the world that you move around in, somebody's hurt. And now what are you going to do? Now, it's not like we have to have everything that carbon copy and imitate Suniti, because it's not appropriate, nor do we have her qualification. But there are principles. Pay attention, because it's going to happen if it's not already happening at the moment, situations you're involved with or somebody's hurt. It'll happen again and again and again. So it's very instructive. We heard yesterday one of the six principles that Prabhupada said that is a benefit from hearing the Dhruva story is this one. It generates a feeling of pure devotional service in the hearts of the hearers. So along with Dhruva, Suniti, hearing, as far as, I haven't seen any commentary that says she's a pure devotee. But she's a pure devotee. She has all the symptoms of a pure devotee. Listen carefully. And hearing will be inspiring and generate a feeling of moving in this direction from wherever we are towards being like her. So the response behavior or emotion demonstrates her compassion and her sense of seeking a direction to move in besides the reacting direction. So here's the verse. When Dhruva Maharaj reached his mother, his lips were trembling in anger, and he was crying very grievously. So her first response, a mother's response, Queen Suniti immediately lifted her son onto her lap, his little boy, while the palace residents who had heard all the harsh words of Suruchi related everything in detail. Thus, Suniti also became greatly aggrieved. So here comes negative emotion number one. She's aggrieved. It's okay, devotees, that you feel and acknowledge negative emotion. That's just how you respond to it. Because negative situations can be hurtful. Next. This incident was unbearable to Suniti's patience, another emotion. She began to burn as if in a forest fire, another emotion. And her grief, in her grief, she became like a burnt leaf and so lamented. But she's, okay, those emotions may come into your life when you, it hasn't happened to her, but it happened to her son. So she's feeling those emotions. As she remembered the words of her co-wife, her bright lotus-like face filled with tears. And thus she spoke. So now, the emotion is there. What's she going to do with that emotion and the situation? First is compassion. She acknowledges the feelings of her son. And she's empathically feeling the feelings of her son, as well as her own feelings. And her first gesture is to console by what mothers do. They take their child on their lap and so on. She doesn't impulsively get enraged and say harsh things and so forth and so on. She doesn't act impulsively on her own feelings, but rather seeks to find a solution. That's where she goes next. And it's not forgetful of Krishna, but it's mindful of Krishna, seeking a Krishna solution. There's these two options, the react option, and the problem overwhelms you and you feel toasted or whatever, or the person that you're interacting with, that's where they're feeling and that they're reacting to life through rocks at them and it hurts, and that's all they know and it's all they're involved with. But the solution-oriented approach looks for a solution. You know, so this is, whether it's stress management or counseling or devotee care or any of those nice terminologies that we use in our, you know, ISKCON vernacular. Take shelter of Krishna. Never leave the position of shelter of Krishna and connect it to Krishna. What is a practical thing you can do? So here's from Stress Management 101 in the secular world. The reacting is, you know, negative. The managing or stress management is life throws rocks at you, it hurts. You take the rock and throw it in the air, catch it, and you consider, you go to the pause space, and you consider, what are my options? I mean, one option, of course, is you take the rock and throw it back at whoever threw it at you. But there may be multiple other options, and you consider what your options are. So one of the things that's recommended in stress management and in devotees' lives is, are there things that you can do today that give you strength, clarity, happiness, contentment, and do some of that. Make your emotional state, your mind, more relaxed, peaceful. And when your mind is more relaxed and peaceful, intelligence is more likely to come up with a solution about the situation. If there's something that can be done in life, there's sometimes nothing you can do. you know, when it's cold, it's cold. You put a jacket on, but you can't like make it not cold. You can respond. You can whine and complain, oh, it's cold. Or you can put a jacket on and turn the heat up or whatever. You can do things that are practical. Supposing it's ill health. Supposing it's all kinds of supposings. This is a big topic, and it's easy to go way over there and get away from the Bhagavatam to illustrate. I'll say one of them. One of my favorite ones is Viktor Frankl. Viktor, V-I-K-T-O-R, Frankl, F-R-A-N-K-L. He wrote a book in 1946, just after World War II, after he had been in a Nazi concentration camp as a Jewish man, and he survived. And he wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. It's used by devotee counselors all the time, marriage counselors and devotee counselors and counselors. Very, very, it's been reprinted some number of times, 19 times or something like that, because it's a real skinny book and it's really easy to read, so people buy it. And it has a lot of valuable short statements. So one of the things, whatever is in our life situation or someone dear to us situation, it's not the same as being in a Nazi concentration camp for some number of years. And without the details of what that experience was, he describes it a little bit. And what are you going to do? Sometimes there's situations in life, there's nothing you can do. So he writes, what man needs is not release from circumstances that are outside of control at any cost, that circumstance that's creating the negative emotion. Get rid of that negative thing that's causing the negative emotion at any cost. Something, you know, obsession. That's not what man needs. He writes that what man needs is to pursue a purpose of life that's awaiting them to fulfill. In his case, it was, he was a practicing psychologist, whatever, I think psychiatrist or psychologist or something, and he wanted to be able, on the other side of this experience of the Nazi concentration camp, to help people who are trapped by circumstances in their life causing them lots of negative emotion, and how to help them get on the other side. So that was, for him, a purpose awaiting for him to be fulfilled. And that gave him strength to go on the other side of the negative emotion, the circumstance that he had no way of escaping that circumstance till the war was over. He survived. There's more details. So, devotees, what's that purpose awaiting for you to be fulfilled? Personal. You can say general, you know, go back to Godhead. Or become a pure devotee. Certainly that's, you know, long-term ultimate. But in the course of this lifespan, what's some gift that Krishna has given you that gives you energy and purpose, and it's waiting for you to grow into that, and whatever that is, invest in that. Okay, that's enough on. Here's Henry Ford said the same thing. Don't find fault, find remedy. So, as you may know, Henry Ford was a theist. Henry Ford was a believer in reincarnation. That means, you know, there's an eternal soul beyond the body. He understood that. Besides, you know, a materially successful man, he had some spirituality somewhere in there in his life. So spiritual, trying to become devotees, We need to go to the respond option instead of the react option and practice it. And hearing how Suniti does what Suniti did, and hear it again and hear it again and hear it again, and meditate on the strength that she had and the strength that she was able to transfer to her little boy, is very instructive in our devotee community, not just mothers and fathers, but being a good community member. Listen carefully. She also was breathing very heavily, and she did not know the factual remedy for the painful situation. She was searching. Super Soul, please give me a remedy. And she couldn't find the remedy. So then she spoke to her son the following way. And as she spoke to her son, she's going to point to higher principles. That's the message that will help us in situations where we're giving guidance to people, whoever that may be. And for her, the first higher principle that she pointed to was this Amangalam principle, as you see in the Sanskrit. My dear son, don't wish for anything inauspicious for others. She knows her son. She's a mother. She knows her son. And her son is in this retaliatory mood. Don't do that. Don't wish ill for others. Anyone who inflicts pains upon others suffers himself from that pain. You know, law of karma. She's teaching him. Don't. This amangalam is translated sometimes as fault finding. Our Vaishnav literature is filled with instruction not to fault find. I wish I had more time, but I want to tell a story, but I'll have to not tell the whole story. One of my heroes in Krishna consciousness is Bhaktisiddhanta. It was the first Krishna conscious literature that I received was when I was in college, and Burijan Prabhu gave me a Back to Godhead magazine. He wasn't Burijan at the time. He was by his non-devotee name. And I didn't know him so well, and he gave me a Back to Godhead magazine. I didn't know what Back to Godhead was at all. He just gave it to me. In short, after some challenges by people saying, you're into that? And I hadn't even read it. I said, you know, what's that that they say don't be into? So I read it. And it was an article by Bhaktisiddhanta that I had to look up the title. The Bhagavad is Ontology and Morphology. Ah. There were three words just in the title I had to look up in the dictionary. And then the rest of the article is Bhaktisiddhanta's high language, and I read the whole thing. It took me 3 hours doing my college thing of, you know, underlining things and writing things in the margin, this and that, and 3 hours passed. It was like snap of a fingers, and I had completely lost track of time. And I don't know how much I understood, but I knew my consciousness was in another place. And I could understand Bhaktisiddhanta is not an ordinary person. So that was my first Krishna conscious literature, and I've always held him in that kind of regard. My next encounter with Bhaktisiddhanta was as a bhakta in the Boston temple. That's the first temple I joined. And Guru Das had just come from India, and he had a stack of books. And I asked him, can I look at your books? Because I like books. And he said, sure. So the top book was a book by Bhaktisiddhanta. Oh, Bhaktisiddhanta. And I opened up to the preface page, and at the preface page, just short, a Vaishnava never finds fault in others, for by doing so, they're only showing that their own heart is honeycombed with the same fault. That is to say, someone that's a transcendentalist doesn't find fault. You can see between this and that. The power of discrimination is going on. That's what the intelligence does, to understand this from that. But finding fault is not just discriminating, seeing this from that. It's having a judgment on this and that. Don't fault find. Then the next little paragraph, sentence actually. Rather, a Vaishnava is one who always looks within. So if you see something outside of yourself, this is a nice teaching. It's still with me. That was 50 years ago. If you see something outside of you that you know it's not okay, look inside yourself. Is that not okay thing inside myself? That's a Vaishnava. Make the heart clean. That's your first business. This isn't our first business. So she, the mother, is teaching the son because she has that quality herself. We'll see as we go along. Therefore, when she says it, it's not just advice. It's her consciousness. She's on the receiving end of hurt, and she's not finding fault with anybody. She's a pure devotee. Very special personality. So here's Vishwanath speaking on the same. Oh, son, do not find fault in others, because those who have given suffering to others previously will receive the same in this life. That's his translation of the verse. That is to say, Dhruva, you gave hurt to someone else, now you're receiving the fruit of that hurt that you gave to someone else. His commentary, do not find fault, Amangalam, in your stepmother. You have experienced the results of sins you have committed in previous births. Since the person who gives suffering to others in a previous life receives it back in this life. Very important lesson. No, we all have friends and we all have people that we interact with. It's not like you have to say this to everybody, but when it's appropriate, you say it. Prabhupada said this, those of you that have been to the Festival of Inspiration when it was running, Peter Burwash every year spoke on this. Don't blame the instrument of your karma. You know the story. So there's those of you who don't know the story. Peter Burwash, was a householder, and he was a very successful entrepreneur. He was not only a tennis pro, but he was a teacher of tennis pros in Hawaii. He's a very successful man. And so he earned money at a time when most of us, like me, you know, I had a medical career, but I just joined the Hare Krishna movement and I didn't make money. So there were many people that were not earning money, and he was earning money. So he gave a donation to the temple, $500. At that time, that was a lot. And then shortly after he gave the money, the man he gave the money to ran away with the money. So next time Prabhupada was visiting Hawaii, he had this relationship with Prabhupada. He would sit with Prabhupada, and he told the story, among other things. And Prabhupada didn't condone the behavior. The behavior is not very good. But you, how should you respond? Don't blame the instrument of your karma. Whoa. And there's other examples of that. Because of time, I won't go into the other examples. But it's an important lesson that we should live by, and when it's as it's appropriate to the persons we're interacting with, help them understand the principle. Don't whack them with the stick of knowledge, but help people understand a principle. Then here's another principle that is coming out of Suniti to Dhruva, and that is acceptance principle. Here's how Prabhupada writes about it in the Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18. This is Prikshit Maharaj and the sage who he puts the snake around his neck. The devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even though they are defamed, cheated, cursed, disturbed, neglected, or even killed, they are never inclined to avenge themselves. No, Dhruva wants to avenge. He wants revenge. The advice of his mother is don't go there. Narada says the same thing. Don't go there. He can't hear it. He explains why later. So here's the higher principle that she's saying. My dear boy, whatever has been spoken by Suruchi, your stepmother, although very harsh to hear, is factual. That is, take shelter of Narayana or Vishnu. Now, her advice is, accept the karma that you have received from her, the negative part, but you're getting some good parts, so be a paramahansa. Take nectar from a filthy place. That part of what she said, it's right. Therefore, if you desire at all to sit on the same throne as your stepbrother Uttama, then give up your envious attitude, please, and immediately try to execute the instructions of your stepmother. Give up your envy towards her, which is just a response of envy, her envy towards you. Don't go there. Envy is very bad. This is a nice graphic. Sorry, I didn't do the graphics here. Envy is like a hungry demon with lots of sharp teeth, which can eat away any positive qualities. Pride and envy, these two, they can debilitate anything good. So beware of pride, beware of envy. Whatever goodness may be in you, it'll be gone quickly by those two. So on this principle of acceptance, I want to acknowledge the source of this following. This is Adi Purusha, who is one of the Bhakti Shastri teachers in Vrindavan, V-I-H-E. And in his teaching, Bhagavad Gita, he has come up with this, so just borrowing it from him, acceptance. When we don't accept an undesired event, it becomes anger. When we accept it, it becomes tolerance. When we don't accept uncertainty, it becomes fear. When we accept it, it becomes adventure. When we don't accept others' bad behavior towards us, it becomes hatred. When we accept it, it becomes forgiveness. When we don't accept others' success, it becomes jealousy. When we accept it, it becomes inspiration. Acceptance is the key to handling life well. So this is part of a profile that he uses for teaching Bhagavad Gita. Nice. It's being strongly emphasized here in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Dhruva story. So Suniti, this is Vishwanath's commentary, my weeping has been written on my forehead by the Creator since birth. this negative being rejected and neglected by my husband and the feelings and the weeping. And now with your situation, I accept it. It's outside of my having any ability to do anything about it. Like being in a Nazi concentration camp or being in a relationship. So she's not feeling ill towards her step co-wife or towards Uttanapada. She's just accepting it. And yet at the same time, she's wishing happiness for her son. And she's able to pass on to him the means for that happiness because she knows what, how to get that happiness. Take shelter of the one who is the shelter of higher principles. So she's spoken of some higher principles, but how do you access those higher principles when you're struggling with lower principles? The reacting stage. And it's the lotus feet of the personality of God. It takes shelter there, just like a mother bird gives shelter to the little baby birds, and they're feeling protected. Naturally so. In the language of Bhagavatam, it's sanatha and anatha. One who is without a master is anatha, and they're unprotected. And Dhruva, feel protected by the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. Without further delay, you must engage yourself in worshiping the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you desire to be seated like your brother, he wanted to climb on the lap of his father with his brother. Execute the words, true words uttered by Saruchi. Without envy of her, worship the lotus feet of the Lord. And then she launches into this glorification of the lotus feet. She's a devotee. She knows where she's going, even in adverse circumstances. And she wants to pass that on to her son. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is so great that simply by worshiping his lotus feet, your great-grandfather, Lord Brahma, acquired the necessary qualifications to create this universe. Although he is unborn and the chief of all living creatures, he is situated in that exalted post because of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom even great yogis worship by controlling the mind and regulating the life air. Your grandfather, Swayambhuva Manu, executed great sacrifices with distribution of charity and thereby with unflinching faith and devotion. He worshipped and satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By acting in that way, he achieved the greatest success in material happiness and afterwards achieved liberation. He's still alive when she's speaking, but he will achieve liberation, which is impossible to obtain by worshiping the demigods. So she's performing this guru function, the Vartma Pradarshika guru function. That's very important in our lives, that we have such a relationship. We have the good fortune. We can serve in that capacity ourselves. My dear boy, you also should take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very kind to his devotees. Persons seeking liberation from the cycle of birth and death always take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord in devotional service, becoming purified by executing your allotted occupation. Just situate the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your heart. And without deviating for a moment, engage always in his service. It's a nice instruction. Mama Nusmarayujacha, in Bhagavad Gita's language. Always think of Krishna situated within your heart. That's how you'll always think of him. And engage in your prescribed duty. Here's Vishwanath's way of presenting. The Lord is affectionate to his servant. He will have more affection for you, his servant, than the affection of millions of mothers like me. Nice. I'm your mother and I have affection for millions. His affection. So you take shelter of him with affection and he'll take care of you. Everything. Fix him in your mind purified by bhakti dharma. This is to a friend or to a child or to a community member or principles of responding rather than reacting. My dear Dhruva, as far as I am concerned, I do not find anyone who can mitigate your desires, your distress, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose eyes are like lotus petals. Many demigods, such as Lord Brahma, seek the pleasure of the goddess of fortune, but the goddess of fortune herself, with a lotus flower in her hand, is always ready to render service to the Supreme Lord. She's a pure devotee. She's had all these negative emotions. She's feeling compassion and empathy for her son's emotions. She understands his mind. She's giving him the solution that's outside of her capacity to provide. Dhruva considers very carefully his mother's advice. Who was actually, her advice was actually meant for fulfilling his desired objective. Therefore, after deliberate consideration and with intelligence and fixed in determination, he left his father's house. So that's the end of this section. A comment that comes in the commentary. How can such an exalted mother send her son to the jungle? Fierce animals, snakes, no samosas. How's he going to survive? What mother could do that? Well, Suniti could do that for a couple of reasons. She had exclusive, implicit faith in Vishnu. It's said later in the commentary that she was constantly praying to Vishnu to protect her son. She had faith that he would, so that doesn't mean she didn't pray. She prayed for the protection of her son. But the whole principle seems to me to go against motherhood. She's just like on this very exceptional platform. As well, she knew the nature of her son. Her son wasn't going to take, she didn't even like try to say don't. Her son is not going to take no for an answer. There's certain personality types, you say no, that makes them more determined. Someone taught me a lesson about that. Someone that's of that personality type. And they gave examples. So she knew. Saying, you know, now Narada coming after breakfast is going to be Narada encountering and having discussion with Dhruva. And he's meeting Dhruva. So he's examining Dhruva. His mother already knows. And she has exceptional faith, and she can impart, she imparted that exceptional faith to her son. You can't give what you don't have. You can give what you have. And you, even when you have, you need to be thoughtful about what you give and how you give it and so forth and so on. But, you know, Suniti is a special personality and a very important, I'll say one other thing because it's almost 9 o'clock. I spent 20 days, maybe 15 to 18 hours, 15 to 16 hours a day on Ramayana in the month of October, Aranyakanda, Kishkinda Kanda, and the beginning parts of Sundara Kanda. And I learned a lot, and one of the things I learned was that Ramanuja, what's the name of Ramanuja Acharya's spiritual master? Say it louder. Yamunacharya. Very good. Yamunacharya gave teachings on Ramayana to Sri Shailapurna, who gave them to Ramanujacharya, and then downstream the followers of Ramanujacharya in turn followed 18 primary lessons from Ramayana. It relates to this. And one of those 18 is this function that Suniti plays, that the path of surrender, Sharanagati, involves someone who is his language, Jamunacharya's language, is an intermediary, you know, Avartma Pradarshaka Guru in our language. That is, someone that points the way, someone that prays and well wishes on your behalf. Just like, you know, we go to programs. The other day we were at a program, and there was somebody in the audience, I felt intuitively, here's a candidate for bhakti. So that person, someone should follow up with that person. And who knows? Maybe they'll have no interest whatsoever, and maybe they'll have some interest whatsoever. And if there's a well-wisher that extends himself to that person, then the possibility is they'll take another step and then take another step. So in the process of Sharanagati, Yuvanacharya writes that there is such a function is essential, not optional. So Suniti, she's eminently qualified, and she's performing that function. The result of which, she goes back to Godhead. Now, there's other things in between, but she already has that full faith. That's another qualification for going back to Godhead. And her son becoming a pure devotee, that's another qualification. She ends up going back to Godhead. But she's performing this function. It's a guru function. It's an important element in the Sharanagati process. So we can also be such functionaries in assisting the personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, to bring people again to his shelter. Even we're not qualified like Suniti is. It's a service that we can be given the opportunity to do. Now, it's really good if you become really qualified, because purity is the force. It's more effective the more your heart is pure. And one of the ways to make your heart more pure is avoid amangalam. When somebody hurts you, don't fault find. Refrain from that conduct, that emotion, and instead be tolerant of the duality feature. Accept that it's something that's coming because of your past activity. And now, what are your options? It doesn't mean don't do anything, don't say anything, but don't get in a reactive space. be in a Krishna conscious space where your interest is pleasing Krishna and connecting yourself and others your life is involved with, connecting with Krishna in a way that's pleasing to Krishna. Very valuable lessons, very practical, everyday life lessons from this ancient story that's from the beginning of creation. So, the 9 o'clock bell is ringing, and we're not going to have time for questions because we're going to keep the schedule. We'll try to have some time for questions. If you have questions, we can discuss them after the next class. A couple of reminders. On your way out, or do you have those handouts now? So take one of those handouts. It has a couple of images at the very bottom and some text and commentary of BBT and Vishwanath on those five verses, 2 through 5. And I encourage you, invite you, request whoever you sit and have prasadam with, discuss what's being asked of you to discuss. How do these interact with one another? How does it play into our practical lives? How does it help us understand the Dhruva narration? So it's not just information. You see if you can bring the information inside, integration and transformation. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.